a $250 leather jacket. That is the price of 7 human lives in the city of Chicago. Not a shipment of pure cocaine. Not a $1 million power vacuum in the gang hierarchy. A piece of clothing, stolen from the wrong car. By the time the smoke cleared from the south side, Arnell and James Johnson had left a trail of charred remains and execution-style hits that made the city's most hardened kingpins look like amateurs. This was not just a murder spree. It was a message written in gasoline. I remember the smell of West Pullman that night. It was the scent of hair and drywall and cheap accelerant. It's a smell that sticks to your skin for weeks. We found a single, mundane object, sitting on the sidewalk, 3 blocks away from the inferno, a half-eaten sandwich in a wrapper. It seemed like trash, but it was the first clue that the killers were not in a hurry. They were enjoying the show. When we arrived at the smoldering wreckage of that home on the south side, we did not find the aftermath of an accidental electrical fire. We found a slaughterhouse disguised by arson. Inside the ruins were the bodies of 7 people, men, women, and children. They had been trapped, executed, or consumed by the flames in a calculated display of dominance. As the investigation unfolded, we realized this was not an isolated tragedy. It was the climax of a blood feud that had been simmering on the streets of Inglewood for months. It all traced back to one night, one petty theft, and 2 brothers who decided that human respect was worth more than the souls of their neighbors. The South Side in the late 80s and early 90s operated under a set of invisible laws. You did not take what was not yours, and if you did, you dealt with the consequences without the police. Arnell and James Johnson were the enforcers of those invisible laws. They were not kingpins leading an army. They were something far more unpredictable. A 2-man gang. Even the established organizations gave the Johnsons a wide berth because they possessed a level of raw, senseless volatility that did not follow the usual logic of the drug trade. They grew up in these alleys. They knew every abandoned building and every shortcut through the vacant lots of West Pullman. That knowledge, once a survival skill for 2 boys in a rough neighborhood, was now a predatory tool. The trigger was the kind of petty theft that happens 1,000 times a day. Someone broke into Arnell Johnson's car and took a leather jacket. In most neighborhoods, that is an insurance claim. But for Arnell and James, that jacket was an extension of their identity. In their world, to be robbed is to be tested. If you do not respond, you are weak. If you are weak, you are a target. They did not go to the precinct. They did not ask for the property back. They began a methodical, months-long campaign of terror to dismantle the lives of anyone associated with the insult. I want you to look at the geometry of the West Pullman house for a moment. Most arsonists throw a bottle and run, not the Johnsons. They moved with a chilling level of patience. They ensured every exit was compromised. They moved deliberately, one by one, ensuring the message would be unmistakable. When the fire started, it was an inferno. The people inside were trapped. Some were shot as they tried to flee. Others never made it to the door. Among the victims were family members and children. To the Johnson brothers, there was no such thing as an innocent bystander. If you were under the roof of their enemy, you were part of the debt. The dismemberment of the community's safety was complete. This was not a gang war. It was a massacre. The remains found in the rubble were so badly charred that identification took days. The brutality of the act sent shockwaves through the department. Even for detectives who had spent decades in the most violent precincts, this was a new level of depravity. These were not panicked men trying to hide a crime. These were men who used fire as a signature. They made 7 people vanish into the ash in a single night, and the most disturbing part was the silence that followed. In a densely populated city, in a neighborhood where everyone is watching, no one saw anything, not because they were complicit, but because they knew that the Johnsons were still out there. They knew that if a leather jacket could lead to an incinerated house, a conversation with a detective would lead to a casket. The investigation was a slow, agonizing process. There was no physical evidence at the scene that pointed directly to the brothers. The fire had seen to that. But the streets have a way of whispering, When the pressure gets high enough, every victim in the fire, and several victims of unsolved shootings in the months prior, all had one thing in common: a connection to the theft of Arnold Johnson's property. The break in the case did not come from a high-tech lab. It came from the weight of the bodies. The brothers had become too loud. Even their own associates began to realize that the Johnsons were a liability. A witness eventually came forward, someone who had seen the brothers near the house before the flames erupted. Once the first witness spoke, the wall of silence began to crumble. Other pieces of the puzzle fell into place. Shell casings that matched the weapons used to keep the victims inside the burning house, and the testimony of those who had heard the brothers bragging about their retribution. The trial was a grim affair. The families of the victims filled the courtroom day after day. Mothers who had lost their entire world in a single night of fire. Survivors who carried the physical and mental scars. Across the aisle sat Arnell and James Johnson, expressionless, cold, seemingly bored by the proceedings. The prosecution laid out the timeline, from the stolen jacket to the final embers of the West Pullman house. They showed that this was not a crime of passion, but a crime of ego. The verdict was life. But for the families, the word justice felt hollow. No sentence could undo the damage. No amount of time in a cell could bring back the children who died in that house. The Johnson brothers were removed from the streets, but the shadow they cast remained. They proved how easily a community can be held hostage by two people who simply do not care about the cost of their actions. Seven lives taken over a $250 leather jacket. When you sit with that, you realize the uncomfortable truth of the urban landscape. This story is about a world where human life was treated as a disposable commodity. The Chicago massacre of the Johnson brothers is a reminder that when respect is the only thing a person has, they will kill to keep it, and they will burn everything else to the ground, just to make sure you remember their names. The detectives would later say that they had never seen a motive so small lead to a tragedy so large. It redefined our understanding of risk. It was about the brothers who lived down the street, who followed no rules but their own, and who viewed the world through a lens of perpetual grievance. The names of the victims became footnotes in the larger story of the city's violence. But for their families, they were everything. The Johnson brothers are gone, locked away in the deep silence of the Illinois Department of Corrections. But the fire they started continues to burn in the memories of those who survived. If you were on that jury, and you saw the brothers sitting there without a shred of remorse for the children they burned alive, could you find it in yourself to believe in rehabilitation? Or is some evil so cold that it can only be contained, never cured?